නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස. So we were discussing actually the Sabiya Sutta, which is available in Suttanipata, and later actually we spent two weeks discussing on absorptions, jhana, and again we are now coming back to the Sabya Sutta where we have stopped. So as we discuss, Sabya Sutta is a interesting one where Buddha give the answers to the Paribrajaka Sabya, the ascetic Sabya. So he actually got these questions from one of the celestial beings, and it is mentioned that the Sabya and this particular celestial being are practicing together while in a former birth during the Kassapa Buddha's time. And so this Sabhya is actually a very intelligent person. He has become an ascetic a long time ago, and he's spending time learning the ascetic practices. And again, he has become basically foremost in one of the debating styles. So actually then this celestial being come and try to help him by giving these questions, but interestingly he didn't ask from whom that he has to ask these questions. So Sabiya went from one teacher to the other teacher, the most popular ones like the six teachers who are popular during that time: Sanjaya Bellattiputta, Pakuda Kacchayana, Ajitakesa Kambula, Nigantanathaputta. So those six persons, so when this Sabiya approached, but they are not interested in answering him, and he actually was quite disappointed about that, and then even wanted to leave the ascetic life. But anyway, he thought of going to the Buddha, and they are also little puzzled at the beginning, thinking that the Buddha just started the teaching career, and there are not many followers, but anyway, a very good reputation is now available. So anyway, ultimately he decided to approach the Buddha. Now Buddha opened the door, basically invited him to ask any questions, and so Sabiya was quite happy about it, and now he is asking the questions. So we almost gone through half of the sutta, and now we are going to discuss from where we have stopped. Now Sabiya is asking, "Kang ketta jinang vadanti Buddha, kusalang kena katancha panditoti, muni nama katang pavuchati, putto me bhagava byakarohi." So he is asking few more questions. So who is the ketta jina? To whom that we can say the ketta jina, a field knower. Field knower, Kusalam. Who is the Kusala? Who is the skillful person? And what way one has to be skillful? Kathancha Panditoti. Who is the Pandita? Who is the Pandit? Who is the wise person? And then Muni Nama Katang Pauchati. Who is the Muni? How one is called Muni? Putto me Bhagava Byakarohi. Please answer me, Venerable Sir. So this is the question that the Sabiya asked. Actually, four questions are there. Now Buddha is answering the questions. Kettani vichayya kevalani dibbang manusakancha brahmana ketta. Sabba ketta mula bandhana pamutto ketta jino thadi pauchate tatatha. Now first, the ketta. Actually, ketta is a metaphor used for kamma even in certain suttas. Kammang kettang vijnanam bijang tanhasineho. So this is one statement that Buddha repeated at several suttas. Kamma is considered as the field where the being may sprout as a vijnana bija, vijnana seed. So vijnana seed is very much like planted on the kamma ketta, kamma field, and then the Tanha, the craving, is where the moisturizing or the watering happens, and then the tree grows. So that is how typically the rebirth cycle happens. potential kamma is available that acts as the field, the nutritious field, and then fertile field, and then vijnana bija, the consciousness as a seed is being planted there, and then watering happens in the form of craving. As a result of that, the continuation of the life, the birth happens. Now here they ask, the question is, who is the Kettajina, who has conquered the field? So basically here the Arahant is one who has completely overcome the generation of the Kamma. Kettani vichayya kevalani, so all the different kinds of fields he has examined. Dibbam manusakancha brahmana ketta, so it is not just human related field, but even the celestial, even the human, and even the Brahma field he has very much examined. Sabba ketta moola bandhana pamuttu, now all these fields he has freed from, and he has no more roots into these fields. And ketta jino tadi pauchade tatadda, so he is the person who we can call as the field knower, the field conqueror. Now here in that sense we need to understand, now say someone is practicing vipassana, so they are, it is said that the vipassana is an adhikusala, it's not the typical mundane kind of a kusala, mundane kind of skillful activity, but a kind of an activity which helps to penetrate this whole birth cycle, rebirth cycle. So the wholesome and unwholesome both can be penetrated if one is practicing vipassana. So typically the approach is that we need to develop wholesome, abandon the unwholesome, and once you reach some state, one has to abandon even the typical wholesome things, because one does not make a person out of that. One does not make any self out of that. So very much like the progression happens without a self. So that is why it is indicated in the Samadhitti, the second form of Samadhitti, the supramundane type of Samadhitti, Arya, Anasava, Lokuttara, Magganga. So it is noble, free from influxes, and it is supramundane, and it has become a path factor. So this is the path that Buddha recommends for a person who is very much like transcending both good and the bad, wholesome activities as well as the unwholesome activities. Now if one is following that, he can stop the if he attained the arhantship, he can actually, by following this path within this very life, he can attain the Nibbana in this very life, and he can conquer the field of karma available in this human realm, the celestial realm, and even the Brahma realm. So there is no rebirth after the passing away from this life. So basically he has completely transcended all the different kinds of fields. So now Buddha is answering the next question. Kosani vichaya kevalani dibbam manusakancha brahma kosam sabba kosa moola bandhana pamuttu kusalo thadi pauchate tatatta. Now Buddha is answering the question, who is the kusala, who is the skillful person? Now it is very much like a similar statement. Kosani vichaya kevalani, different kinds of stores, different kinds of places where one can get the rebirth. So it can be human realm, it can be celestial realm, it can be Brahma realm. Now all these different places he has sabba kosa moola bandhana pamuttu. So if there is any kind of bondage to these places, these very much like the cells, he has now removed that bondage. And he is the skillful person that we can say as the kusala. Now, till we have some kind of an attachment to any of these places, we may have the corresponding kind of desires, and accordingly we may get the rebirth. Say for example, if we have so much of attachment to the human realm related activities, the places, the things, all the affairs and all these typical mundane sensual pleasures, so that means we are, our minds are fairly overwhelmed by the sensual pleasures. So accordingly, the next birth will be more possible to have in the sensual realm. So sensual realm, either the hell realm, either the human realm, or the celestial realms. So these are the three places, three fields, or three areas where the sensual realm is indicated. So one, till one has the sensual desires, so we may get birth during the sensual realm. And typically there are five fetters, what we can say as the Orambhagya Sanyojana, the lower fetters, which are binding us towards this lower realm. Lower realm is the sensual realm. So till we have that bondages, those Sanyojanas, those fetters, actually we can't be free. We can't go away. We are very much like bound to the cells. The cell of the human realm, the cell of the hell realm, the cell of the celestial realm. So our mind can't be freed because it is being bound by the sensual desires. And there are five fetters typically mentioned. Sakkaya Ditti, Vichikiccha, Silabbata Paramasa, Kamaraga, Patiga. So the personality view, the skeptical doubt, and then thinking that the rituals, rites and rituals are merely enough to attain liberation. So Silabbata Paramasa, or taking it too tightly. And then the sensual desire and the ill will. So till one has all these fetters, so his mind is very much like bound to the sensual realm. So he is not freed. So he is bound to this particular place, this particular field, this realm, sensual realm. Now here, Buddha mentioned here, so kosani vichayya kevalani dibbam manusakancha brahma kosam sabba kosa moola bandana pamuttu. Now this particular person, this practitioner, this arahant, has overcome, freed from all the celestial, human and the Brahma stores, Brahma realms. And now he is the freed person and he is the skillful person. And then he is answering the next question. So that is Upativat, Panditu. Who is the Pandit? Dubhayani vichayya pandarani ajjattang bahindacha suddhi panyu kanhan sukhang upati vattu pandito thadi pauchate tatattha. So here Buddha mentioned, having examined both translucencies, internal and external, wise about purity, who has transcended the dark and the bright, such a one is truthfully said to be a pandit. Now, here also very much a same theme is repeated when consider the Kettajina, who is the conqueror or the field knower, and they are also very much like that person examine all the fields in terms of the karma. And he is the conqueror. He is the one who knows the fields. And then another person is called Kusala, because he has examined the places, stores, where the birth can happen, and then he has transcended those places. Now here the Pandit is also similar, where he has abandoned all the Kusala and Akusala, wholesome and unwholesome, so that all internal and external places he also has abandoned. Now basically all three have done abandoning of both kusala and akusala. Typically, it is recommended to do the wholesome activities because this kind of rebirth cycle happens and we need some kind of wholesome results. Otherwise, it would be more difficult and one even can't just understand what's really going on. One may have to go through utter suffering. Example, like in the hell realms. But in the human realm, so we may have the opportunity to look at what's really going on. And it doesn't mean that we are continuously going through suffering. It doesn't mean that we are continuously going through happiness. Both are available, so one can look at what's really going on. And so one may have kind of an opportunity to overcome this situation. Now, overcoming this, as I just mentioned, so one first has to establish oneself in the wholesome side. So that is what is recommended in the Sammāditti in the mundane type. In the mundane type of Sammāditti, so where Buddha basically establish oneself in the mundane kind of wholesome side. So it is Sāsava Punya Bhāgya Upadi Vepakka. Sāsava, it is with some fetters, but it is in the wholesome side, Punya Bhāgya. Upadi Vepakka. So as a result of he continuing doing the wholesome activities, he may get the wholesome results, favorable results. So therefore, so that is the mundane type of Sammāditti. First of all, we need to establish ourselves there. So we being a person, we have a personality and then we become a good person. But without stopping there, as we just discussed, we have to go through the next stage. So that is the supramundane type of Sammāditti. So now one is going through a different approach where even one is abandoning the unwholesome, not only unwholesome, even the wholesome. It doesn't mean that one is not doing anything unwholesome, but the point is, one does not attribute it to a person. That ignorance is as much as possible penetrated. Whenever eye making happens, whenever mind making happens, one, rather than trying to very much like apprehend it, rather than trying to promote it, one is trying to abandon it. So one understands, so this is a false personality, this is a false I, this is a false self that one is trying to establish, so it is not necessary. It creates a lot of suffering. So one is abandoning that eye-making process, mind-making process, comparison process. So as a result of that, now one is getting to a situation, no karma is being accumulated and the available karma is being exhausted. Kīnaṁ purānaṁ navan natti sambhavam. Viratta citta ayatike bhavasmin. So Buddha mentioned in the Ratana Sutta, Kīnaṁ purānaṁ. So all the old karma being very much like exhausted, evaporated, faded away. Navaṁ natti sambhavam. There is no generation of new karma. Viratta citta ayatike bhavasmin. So he is continuing his life without making any defilements and without any attachment, without any expectations. So this is the arahant. So that is highlighted in this particular one. So that is, he is the person who is called Pandita, who is the a wise person, having examined both translucencies, internal and external, wise about purity, who has transcended the dark and the bright. So dark is the unwholesome karma and the bright is the wholesome karma. And he has transcended both. And such a one is truthfully said to be a Pandit. And now we get into the last one. So that is Muni. Who is the Muni? Asatancha satancha nyatva dhammang ajyattang bahiddacha sabbaloki deva manussehi pujaniyo sangang jala maticha so muniti asatancha satancha nyatva. So that means the bad and the good he has known. So different terminologies. And previously Buddha mentioned sukha and kanha and sukha, the black and the white, the dark and the bright. Here Buddha mentioned asatancha satancha. Asatang means that is bad, and satancha means good. And he has seen both, he has understood both. Ajjattam bahiddhacha sabbaloke, within himself and in the outside. So he has seen what is good, what is bad, within his life and in the outside as well. So he has thorough understanding about what is wholesome and what is unwholesome. Kusala and akusala, he is quite well understood. Deva manussehi pujaniyo, and he is being venerated by the celestial beings as well as the human. Sangam jala maticca so muniti, and he has escaped the tie and the net, and he is a muni. So basically sangha is a synonym for defilements, and jala is what represented as a net. So we can say the net and the tie, net and the bondages of the defilements, and he has been maticca, so he has penetrated, he has escaped, he has released, he has overcome, and he is the muni, and he is the sage, and he is worthy of veneration by the devas and the humans. Now, somewhat similar explanations, but looking at from different angles and different terms used. The first one is the Kettajina, second one is the what we call as Kusala, third one is Pandita, and the fourth one is Muni. Now, after answering these questions, now Sabiya was quite happy. Now he is asking few more questions. Kim patti namahu vedagum anuviditam kena kathancha viriyavati ajaniyo kinti namahoti putto me bhagava vyakarohi. Kim patti namahu vedagum, who is the vedagu, who is the veda master, and anuviditam, who is the anuvidita, who is the one cognizant, and kena kathancha viriyavati, who is the viriyava, who is the virya, who is the hero, who is acting like heroic, and then ajaniyo, who is the thoroughbred ajaniya. Kinti nama hoti putto me bhagava vyakarohi. Now four more questions are there. Sabi is asking who is the vedagu, who is the anuvidita, who is the hero, who is the virya, vira, and then who is the ajaniyo, the thoroughbred. So these four questions are now asked from the Buddha. Now he is answering the questions. Vedani vichayya kevalani samananam yani datti brahmananam sabba vedanasu vitaragu sabbang veda maticca vedaguso. Vedani vichayya kevalani samananam yani datti brahmananam. So all the different kinds of Vedas, so different say we can call it as teachings, different teachings which were available among the Brahmins, among the Samanas, and this person has understood them, he learned them, he is the Vedagu. Now this is somewhat representing the those days context. You know that during the Brahmana period, so they have different Veda books, and those Vedas are the places or the books, the scriptures where their ancient knowledge is gathered. And this particular Vedagu, the person who is properly understood them, so he has gone through all, so he has understand all those teachings, he learned them. And not only that, even within the samanas, there are different teachings, and Buddha is actually comes under that group, the samana, and he has penetrated that as well. So basically, whatever the gathered knowledge came from generation to generation, he has understood. And again, what Buddha has mentioned, that also he has understood, which is related to the samana. So that is also understood. So that means he is a well-learned person. And sabba vedanasu vitarago. And now Buddha turns it to a different side. And here Buddha mentioned, to all the different kinds of feelings, he doesn't have any kind of a bondage. He doesn't have any kind of a lust, any kind of a desire. Now this is related to the practice. Previous statements actually we can say fairly related to the learning. So he has a thorough understanding about the Vedas, the knowledges. But here, he has become a person who is not attached to any form of feelings. Typically we know that if we are going through a pleasurable feeling, we immediately get attached to that. We have a typical desire to that, kind of an inclination to that. And if we are going through any kind of suffering, we want to get rid of that. Immediately we get repelled from that. And if we are going through any kind of neutral feeling, we are quite ignorant about it. Or even if we start feeling it, we want to get rid of it and start experiencing some pleasurable feeling. So that is the typical approach we have. But a person who is involved with the Vedanupassana, a practitioner, so he is now changing this attitude. So whenever suffering arises, he doesn't want to immediately get rid of it. Rather, he wants to examine it. He wants to confront it. Confront doesn't mean that he is merely enduring it. Rather, he is examining. He is using it that as a teacher, as an experience, as an opportunity to understand the true nature of the feelings. If there are pleasurable feelings, the situation is the same. So rather than being attached to that, so he is now trying to examine it and to understand that true nature. And if there are neutral feelings, that is also not ignored. Rather, he is trying to examine it and try to understand their true nature. So all the different forms of feelings, now he is using to develop wisdom. So as a result of that, he become vitarago. Now he doesn't have any kind of an attachment, any kind of a biased, internal bias to any form of feelings, because he understood their true nature. Either it would be pleasurable feelings or painful feelings or neutral feelings, all behave the same. They all are subjected to the impermanence, constantly arising and passing away. And as a result of that, they can't provide us lasting happiness. And again, they don't have much control. So they are totally dependent on the form or the type of the contact. So we don't have any much of control. So as a result of that, we understand the non-self nature as well. Now, so this person, this practitioner is now become disenchanted, dispassionate about these different kinds of feelings. Now, as a result of that, he doesn't have any sort of attachment asking for pleasurable feelings. And if he has to go through painful feelings, he can endure it. And he may even use it to develop further wisdom. And if he is going through any neutral feelings, rather than being ignorant about it, he is fully aware of it. And he may even use to develop wisdom. The attitude has completely changed. The approach has completely changed. And as a result of that, now he is dispassionate towards all the different kinds of feelings. Now this is the result of the practice. So without knowing the true nature, if one can try to become somewhat neutral to all these different three categories of feelings, that is also to some extent possible, but typically we don't recommend that. So typically it is said a kind of ignorant type of equanimity that one is developing, Ajnana Upekkha, where one hasn't penetrated their true nature, one didn't understand their true nature, rather just trying to superficially maintain a neutral attitude. So it becomes kind of an indifference, an insensitivity, rather than knowing the true nature and maintaining kind of a detached nature. So it has a significant difference. So here the point is, this particular person, this Arahant, we can say, has penetrated, he has understood their true nature. As a result of that, now there is no any form of inclination, any kind of desire towards any kind of feelings. So he can simply be with the feelings, he can go through the feelings, he may experience different kind of feelings, but no, there is no attachment, there is no lust. Sabba Vedanasu Vitarago Sabbang Vedamaticca Veduguso. Now, having transcended all Vedas, and he, a person who has no attachment to any kind of feelings, and he is the Veda master. Now, we can say Buddha gave kind of a traditional answer at the first part, considering the context during the Buddha's time, because Vedagu is a person who has to know all the different Vedas, the knowledge available during that time. So that is one answer. But most importantly, Veda, Buddha attributes to the Vedana feelings, and this person has transcended all the different kinds of feelings. So he understood thoroughly about all different kinds of feelings. As a result of that, he doesn't have any kind of a passion, any kind of a desire to any form of feeling. So he is now dispassionate about the different kinds of feelings. So he is the Vedaguru. So it's a very interesting answer here. So the second answer especially is quite relevant to us. So as practitioners, do we have such kind of a capacity? We may not be able to immediately acquire such capacity, but still slowly, slowly we would be able to maintain kind of an attitude to while going through all different kinds of feelings, without getting elated by pleasurable feelings, without being attached to pleasurable feelings, or without being sorrowed or panicked by the painful feelings, and without being ignorant about the neutral feelings. One has to maintain a fairly wise attention, a fairly inquired mind towards these different kinds of feelings, so that one is not attached to any of them, because one has understood their true nature. And now Buddha is answering the next question. Anuvicca papancha nama rupang ajjattang bahiddhacha rogamulang Sabba roga mula bandhana pamuttu anuvidito tadi pauchate tatattha. Now this is a very interesting answer, where Buddha say anuvicca papancha nama rupam ajjattam bahindaja roga mula. Now he has known proliferation and name and form as the root of all illness. And it is not only the internal, even the external. Internally and externally. Freed from bondage, the root of all illness, such a one is truthfully said to be cognizant. Anuvidita. See, he has penetrated all the knowledge in a way. Now, here, in one sense, we can say papancha. So, the conceptual proliferation. So, conceptual proliferation is one strong reason for all illnesses. It would be mental illnesses, mental disorders, and it can lead even to the kind of external conflicts happen within a society. So internally also one become, one's mind become fairly cluttered, obsessed, disturbed, panicked, stressed, because of the conceptual proliferation. And again, when one is attributing it to the outside, imposing it to the outside, one start having quarrels, arguments, debates, conflicts with the others as well. So the mental proliferation, conceptual proliferation become one of the root causes for all these conflicts. And when one penetrates that, so it happens, it starts in one's own mind as a nama-rupa. So nama-rupa and vijnana, consciousness and the name and form, are constantly in a kind of a interrelationship, contributing to each other, helping each other. So if nama-rupa is well established, vijnana get established there, vijnana get entangled there. Now they are maintaining a kind of an abyss, a kind of a circular motion is now continuing, helping each other. Now, if one can penetrate that, so that means, first of all, we may have to understand the gross kind of conceptual proliferation, so which is happening as maybe as an argument, as a conflict, as a fight, as a battle, as a war, that is the outside manifestation. But internally one is burning, internally one is going through a lot of turmoil, internally one is going through a lot of agitation. So the outside results also one needs to understand. As a result of that, one now slowly come back to oneself. One has to become introvert, a kind of an introspection one has to continue. So slowly one has to calm down oneself without getting reacting. One has to now calm down, one has to apply brakes, one has to go through kind of a self-management, rather than allowing defilements, rather than allowing proliferation to overwhelm oneself. Now slowly one has to abandon those proliferative thoughts, prolific thoughts. So that is actually a vipassana. Actually, one can do it from samatha meditation as well to some extent, but to truly do it, to properly do it, one has to practice vipassana. Say, particularly when one come across cittanupassana, so one can recognize all these different types of thoughts, different patterns of thoughts, thinking, and slowly, very much like unwind in the process, unentangle in the process. So as a result of that, now less and less thoughts are available in the mind. Very rarely one is subjected to proliferation. So this is something that one has to go through. One should not merely restrict it to mere knowledge, rather through one's own practice, one has to come across this situation. How to overcome proliferation? How to calm down the mind? How to relax the mind? How to maintain kind of a internal silence, inner silence? And when inner silence is present, just to enjoy it without agitating the mind. So these are some very important, crucial results that one needs to acquire during the vipassana practice. Now, if one is going through that, now slowly, he may further penetrate, he may further understand. Now the crux of the problem happens within one's own mind as a name and form. So vijnana get entangled with the name and form, nama-rupa. So if nama-rupa is not present, if the mind is very much like transparent, if there is no scars, there is no signs, and even if signs are there, one is not getting entangled to them. So that means name and form become fairly faded away. So one's mind become fairly transparent. One's mind become very clear, clean. So as a result of that, he has penetrated the name and form. So having known proliferation and name and form, internally and externally, as the root of all illness, freed from bondage, the root of all illness, such a one is truthfully said to be a cognizant. So this answer is very, very interesting and quite relevant to one's practice. So internal diseases, illnesses, as well as the external illnesses manifested as arguments, conflicts, battles, wars, etc. So have a significant connection with the proliferation, which has the root in the name and form. So that name and form, one is now abandoned. So one is called the anuvidita, the cognizant. And now Buddha is answering the next question. Virato ida sabba papakehi nireya dukkhaṁ aticca viriyavāso. So viriyavā padhānavā dhīro thādi pauchate tatattha. So all the different kinds of evils available here, he has abstained from. Virato ida sabba papakehi. Nirya dukkhaṁ aticca viriyavāso. Even the hell-related suffering in the hell, that also he has transcended. So viriyavā padhānavā. He is the one continuing with the striving. Dhīro thādi pauchate tatattha. And he is the hero. He is the heroic person. And he is the proper person. He is the hero that we can say. So that gives a different context to the practice, where one is continuing one's practice with a relentless effort and unwavering kind of effort, and he is the hero. And the last answer to the question, yasassu lunani bandhanani ajjattam bahiddacha sangamula sabba sangamula bandhana pamuttu ajaniyo Tadi pauchate tatattha. Yassasu lunani bandhanani ajjattam bahiddacha sabba sangamula. Now here the context is very much like various bandhana, various bondages, various traps. Now this person has abandoned, destroyed all the bondages, all the traps, and he is the thoroughbred person. You know that if there is a thoroughbred tusker, we can't simply use typical bondages to hold him. He may break all of them, because he's so strong, a thoroughbred tusker. And even a typical horse, if we are having a very thoroughbred horse, so we have to use some special means to hold it, because otherwise it will break all. Now here the context is very similar. This thoroughbred person is a person who has completely cut off the bondages. He has become completely freed, because he is the thoroughbred. One whose bonds have been cut off, internally and externally, the root of ties, freed from bondage, the root of all ties, such a one is truthfully called a thoroughbred. Yassassu lunani bandhanani ajjattam bahiddacha sangamulam sabba sangamula bandhana pamuttu ajaniyo thadi pauchate tatattha. And he is the person who has abandoned, cut off all the bondages, and he is the person called thoroughbred, ajaniyo. Okay, those are the answers Buddha given to the four questions asked by the Sabiya. And I think with that we can conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I open the session for questions. Okay, you have any question? Yeah?
Yes, Bhante.
Okay, we have a question from our side.
Could you give an explanation for what are sense bases?
Sense bases?
Yes.
Yeah. So the six sense bases, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind.
Yes.
So using which actually we operate or we communicate with the outside world. And so that is what we call as the sense bases. Actually, sense bases are necessary and utilized during the communication, during the operation with the outside world. That is how we communicate.
Okay, mm-hmm. So it's not separated into eye and then eye contact. Are those different designations for the sense space?
Yeah, so eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind, they are considered as internal sense bases, and the corresponding form or the sights, sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, and the dhammas, the phenomena, are the external sense bases.
Okay.
And when they are come in line, when they are aligned properly, then the corresponding consciousness happen.
Yes.
So the corresponding consciousness is always a result of these two, coming together of these two.
Yes.
Say for example, eye and the sight or the form are the necessary requirements for the eye consciousness to happen. Without that, eye consciousness can't happen.
Yes.
So when these two come together, as a result of that, eye consciousness happen. Say when ear and sound comes together, as a result of that, the ear consciousness happen. So when this is repeated again and again, this whole process repeat again and again. Now, eye is there, sight is there, eye consciousness is there. Eye is there, eye consciousness is there, eye consciousness is there. Now, when it is repeating, it is called the contact. All three are very much like operating together.
Yes.
They are coming together now. So that is referred as the eye contact.
Okay.
So now it generates a feeling, it generates a perception, it generates different kinds of vitakkas, the thoughts, sankharas. So that is how the process very much like initiates.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you, yeah. Bhante. And the thing that really stood out for me in this your explanations today was the part about, it was the second to last verse where it's speaking of
the feelings.
It's 5:30 in the Bhikkhu Bodhi.
That is the proliferation.
Having known proliferation and name and form.
Mm.
That I just wanted to say that really was. It's very interesting to me because right now I would want to know your feeling on this or your thoughts. Is that for our practice, for our own practice, how do we get to know our proliferation? And so it's coming from ignorance and craving and conceit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has a lot to do with our self-view.
Mm-hmm.
As well. So,
exactly.
Maybe that's the whole thing.
That's the whole thing, yeah.
And so it's very interesting to me because modern psychology is looking at, how people
proliferate.
Yeah.
they do overthinking.
Yes.
And what they
find is that people have
various
early childhood experiences where they're now, at that time, they created a story or a way of dealing with that situation because, let's say, it's your parent
mm-hmm.
who is, abusing you in some way.
Mm-hmm.
The child doesn't understand that, and they try to create a... they try to find a way to adapt to that.
Mm.
And it's not a rational way of adapting,
mm-hmm.
but it ends up making them act in certain ways that are irrational, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's later on they continue to have these
irrational type of story.
Yes, going on for them, and they are living from that
mm-hmm.
for the rest of their life.
Mm.
And the reason it's difficult is because they don't understand, it's subconscious now.
Correct.
So that's why therapists are really helpful to kind of unearth these these beliefs that they're holding on to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just interesting because I think it happens to everybody to mm-hmm. some extent.
Mm-hmm.
We learn some story based on some dysfunctional situation when we're young,
mm-hmm.
and it could even be society today because society is so so backwards to healthy human,
mm-hmm.
I mean even at the time of the Buddha, as we were speaking the other day at one of the sutta discussions, is people are fighting and at war, and it's interesting because our consumer society that we now have all over the world, competitiveness and fighting that are going on, has been going on for generations, for millennia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's become a sort of a sickness of the mind that's we're not aware of it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we're now.
Very much like victims of that inner story.
Yes.
Which we have created during our childhood.
Yes, and different, everybody creates a different sort of a story based on our own, inclinations and
mm-hmm.
based on the personal
mm-hmm.
situation, because
mm-hmm.
it affects everybody differently.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's helpful. Therapists can, somebody, not even therapists, but we need somebody to see us and be able to point out, did you know you're doing this thing that seems, very strange? Why are you doing this?
Exactly. If one is open, then it is quite easy to understand.
Yes.
And openly explaining his own feelings and his own thoughts and his own beliefs.
Yes.
But another thing is sometimes people are not opening up.
Yes.
So they're simply hiding themselves, hiding their problems, and they are internally suffering, and they are not openly talking about it.
Yes, and you can see that in people, and so it's just very interesting to me that this is the most interesting thing, is that it's subconscious, and people have a invested interest in holding on to that view because they believe it's keeping them safe.
Correct.
I need to protect myself.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even know that they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I find that community, living in community, is really helpful, because people can see you and they can say, and if you're open to it, you can then start to let go of your self-view and start to be freed from these things.
Mm.
So it's amazing how, the Buddha is talking about something that is so, we hold on to so tightly that it's so difficult to do these things.
Exactly.
I'm just really amazed by that.
Good. Very good.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. So
yes,
basically... So this conceptual proliferation, as he also further highlighted, is one of the root causes of all the internal and external conflicts. And if one understands their harm, then slowly we can abandon them, minimize them, reduce them, and maybe able to experience the complete freedom from proliferation, at least for some time. Then one may understand the inner silence. One may understand the peacefulness available in the mind when the proliferation is absent. And so that is something that Buddha encourages, to get away from the proliferation, relax the mental proliferation, because it is one of the root causes of the suffering.
Yes.
So that is highlighted in this verse. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for the comment.
Thank you.
Yeah. So any questions coming from the outside? Yeah.
One hand says,
yeah.
Chitra Devi, you can unmute and talk. Yes, thank you very much. Bhante, did you say that this Sutta is from the Samyutta Nikaya.
No, no.
Misunderstand.
No, no, no. This is from the Sutta Nipata, Kuddaka Nikaya. It's in the Sutta Nipata.
It's not from the Samyutta.
No, no.
It's not from the Samyutta Nikaya.
No, no, no.
Okay. And you spoke about about the mental proliferation, and this particular person who was not going to react to the feelings, whether it was pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, where he has penetrated. You said penetrated, not superficially. When some person comes to that level, would that be an arahat, or?
Yeah, I think.
That be an arahat who is able to do it?
Yeah, actually, the full penetration, the complete understanding happens when one becomes an arahant. We can't say that it is available with all the other levels of attainment. Say, for example, even a sotapanna still may have a desire, even to the sensual, even to certain amount of sensual pleasures, because he still has the kamaraga. So that means he hasn't completely penetrated the feelings, but only to some extent he has seen there is no person there, there is no any essence or any substantial thing there. But still the desires there are available for the sensual desires, sensual pleasures. So likewise, even if one becomes an anagami, then one can say he doesn't have any desire for the sensuality related pleasures, but he may have a desire for a kind of unworldly kind of pleasures, say ruparaga, aruparaga. So they are very much like supramundane, or other we can't say, to some extent, so they are not typical sensuality related happiness, but something beyond that. He has certain attachment to that. Only the arahant is the person who is completely free from all.
Yes, Bhante. So, I suppose at some stage, as we are walking on this path, we have brief moments where we can experience this non-reaction, non-proliferation to feelings, but this is only brief, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yes. But then we go back again to the original proliferation and
desiring
and the attachment. Clinging and the attachment.
Exactly.
Right? Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
So even
thank
you very much for the comment.
Sorry.
And even Buddha mentioned now, say if one is if one is in the absorptions, if one is in the jhanas, so there is a certain amount of attachment towards that jhanic feelings or kind of sublime type of experiences one may get attached to, and one may have kind of an entanglement that the mind, the consciousness is somewhat preoccupied with that.
But also, I mean, when I started, I used to enjoy all those things, but
actually that is no problem. So that is something that we don't need to be afraid of. Because during the practice, we need some kind of an encouragement during the practice. But later, when one is fairly conversant, fairly strong, confident in one's vipassana, you don't feel that you need any more kind of a inspiration coming from that experience, because you are fairly confident in your wisdom practice.
Yes, Manda, because now I don't expect anything. I just watch your day, because if there's something that comes up which may be pleasant, I mean, I watch it, that's all. And
correct.
When it goes off, so I watch it. So
yeah.
I think one progresses as one matures, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yes. Right. Thank you, Bhante.
Kundini, you can unmute and talk.
Thank you, Bhante. My question is regarding my practice and what we have been discussing in the past about non-doing. You have been talking about just be instead of doing. And in my practice, I have noticed of late that I used to feel a lot of pity, but it is now so dull.
Mm-hmm.
I am sort of wondering what happened. Am I going retarding my progress? So what is going on? I don't know.
No.
But I'm not asleep.
Yeah.
I'm not asleep.
Yeah, sure. Now, this is very common thing. Basically, so at the beginning of the experience, so whenever we start experiencing some kind of a blissful state, so it become very interesting, very overwhelming, very appreciative, and one become more inspired about it, and all these things are there. But when you are going through it repeatedly and slowly, that the ripples become less and less, and the your interest to that also become less, because you now, it is no more a new thing to you. It is a typical thing. It is a natural thing. And it, now that its strange nature become less and less. So it's a normal, ordinary thing. So now you are not much interested about it. So that's a typical approach, typical situation to all the different kinds of feelings, all the different kinds of experiences that we come across even during the meditation. So that's all right. So that is why now even in the vipassana practice or even in the samatha practice, so the more you mature, you end up in the neutral kind of a feeling. You end up in the equanimity. Equanimity is where you are not being agitated at the excitement, and you are not expecting any kind of thrills, any kind of excitement. Rather, you are maturing in the very much ordinary kind of an experience. So it is not any agitation. You are very much in the baseline.
Oh, I'm glad to know that, Bhante, because I really thought something was not correct, because I used to... It's almost like it's boring.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the correct term, we can say. So we come across as a kind of a boredom, but you need to be with the boredom, because you know our tendency in the life is a kind of an excitement. So we are watching TV, we are watching teledramas, we are watching movies, action films, etc., etc., all because we want excitement. Because we are exciting our mind, we are agitating our mind, and then we are generating some amount of happiness. Now that attitude has to be changed. Rather than exciting the mind, rather than agitating the mind, how about keeping it cool? How about keeping it calm, peaceful, and without going to sleep?
So carry on just like this.
Exactly.
Okay.
Just carry on. Yeah.
Can I think one thing?
Yeah. So just carry on. Basically, so... more you are sort of confident in this state, you may understand, yes, I mean, this is a kind of maturing of the mind. So the mind is not getting agitated now. Mind is free from any lust, mind is free from any desires, but mind is in a peace, at peace. So, you know, the peace is boring.
Thank you, I'm so glad to know that. Yeah. I thought I was depressing.
Okay.
Much merit to you.
Yeah. Okay. So we have another question from our side. Yes.
Okay. Just on that last report, I wonder if is it possible that at that point when it seems boring, that we could open, she could open up to seeing whatever is available there. Maybe there's a more of a happiness or some. Equanimity arising that has some quality in the mind. Could there be something else there in place of the joy, some kind of a mental condition?
Mm. So I feel that typically when the joy subsides, so basically what happens is the neutrality, the neutral type of feeling.
Yes.
So that is explained even in the jhanas. Now say, in the first jhana, you have some amount of rupture. The second, where the rupture is more prominent.
Yeah.
And when it turns into third jhana, the rupture turns into happiness. It's a kind of a more comfortable, contentment kind of feeling.
Yes.
And when you approach the fourth jhana, complete equanimity.
Yes.
So that is common even in the vipassana. Say when you are doing very successful observation of arising and passing away, a lot of joy can arise. But mm-hmm. when you are maturing in that, so the joy joy subsides, and the kind of a neutral approach, more equanimous approach, become more prominent.
Okay.
Yeah. It's common in both in the samatha as well as vipassana.
Yes.
It's very common. At the beginning, you are very much uplifted, inspired because of the pleasurable feelings, or pleasant feelings, very inspiring feelings.
Yes.
But later, that all becomes disappear, and then it is maturing at the equanimity.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So there may be some mental quality there that
it's
noticeable.
Yeah, exactly. So mental. You mean the thoughts?
Not thoughts, but more just a...
more clarity, we can say.
If we try to look at the mind at that point.
So mind becomes stable.
Yes.
So the stability of the mind become more prominent, because the happiness, pleasure,
yes.
rapture, all are a little bit of an agitation to the mind.
Yes.
A little bit of agitation is there during the pleasure, during the rapture.
Yes.
But the equanimous state is more very much like a dull state.
Yes.
So that is why the typically yogis are telling, now I am bored.
Yes.
But that boredom is where the mind is equanimous. Mind is very much in a baseline.
Yes.
There are no ripples in the mind.
Yes. Mm. But if we attach to calling that boring, then that could be sort of a hindrance in a way. Whereas if we just open up to that, whatever that sense is that we have, it can also become sort of a something you may look forward to, or that could be the new attachment.
Correct. Yeah, you don't need to attach to the equanimity either. Yeah, definitely not. Yeah, so that is why Buddha highlights that also.
Yes.
Now even in the fourth jhana, what you have is that. Upekkha sati parisuddhin chatutta jhanam virati. So upekkha, the equanimity and the mindfulness and the purity of the mind is there. Now if you attach to this state,
yes,
so that's also a possibility of attachment.
But that's a good attachment.
A good attachment, yeah. Compared to the previous sons, it's a good attachment.
Okay.
But now Buddha says, you don't need to attach even to that. So you are supposed to use any of these states with non-attachment, with non-identification. So that's the difficult part.
Yes.
So arriving that is necessary. You are establishing yourself, stabilizing yourself at that place is also necessary.
Yes.
But then disclaiming that.
Yes.
Without identification, without telling, so I am there, I am the one experiencing, I am so and so, I am full achieved person.
Yes.
I am so and so. So that is where we are creating a self.
Yeah.
So we are attributing a personification into that process.
Yes.
But if we simply be there, just there,
yes,
without making a self, and even if there are thoughts come, and we know, okay, they will go.
Yes.
And there is no any kind of a thorough, strong attachment to that place or that equanimity either.
Yes.
So you know it's there, just that's all.
Yes. Just trying to let go. Continue.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that these states are being used to further purify the mind.
Yes.
Because this state has some amount of purification compared to the defiled mind. So whenever again mind get attached, again mind start grasping something, so again you may feel some strong kind of a burden, strong kind of a attachment, because where you were is a non-attached, very 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 serene, simplified, unobstructed kind of a mind state.
Yes.
So comparatively, now you can immediately understand the defiled nature of the mind, the obstructed nature of the mind, the burden nature of the mind, or the stressed nature of the mind.
Yes.
So as a result of that, again you are look, coming back and settle in that unattached state of the mind.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. If there are no more questions, then we can wind up the session. I think Priyanka, Manu, I think there are no more questions.
Yes, Bhante, there are no more questions.
Okay. Fine. Okay, thank you very much for the participation. I still like to thank a lot to Priyanka for hosting the session while participating in the Nisaravanaya. She's conducting the residential retreat also. And thank you very much for supporting the process. And all the merits that we have accumulated through the discussion and through the teaching. So we'll propagate to everyone, share with everyone. And we'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mam param. Idam go nyatinam hotu sukita humtu nyatayo. Idam go nyatinam hotu sukita humtu nyatayo. Idam go nyatinam hotu sukita humtu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah, Teruvan Sannai. Yeah.